3172.
SMS Refilwe
on 31702.
And it was on the 3rd of April, way back in 1930, that Tafari Makinen was proclaimed Emperor Haile Selassie, the first of Ethiopia. Emperor Selassie went on to inspire many revolutionaries in the fight against colonialism and was credited also for modernizing Ethiopia by transforming its government and institutions from a feudal system into a constitutional monarchy, as well as opposing and resisting Italian attempts to colonize Ethiopia. And that third, the anniversary, of course, the 3rd of April was yesterday. And we thought to just look back and celebrate, you know, an important historical figure, an important historical development that even now we feel the impact of his actions. We feel the impact of his actions. And we know that a religion has also been, has also come out of his teachings, I guess, or his been inspired by him as well. But there's so many things to unpack when it comes to the Emperor Haile Selassie the First, as well as his legacy. What has he left for African people across their diaspora? And today is, and this segment of the show particularly, looking back, is especially fitting to talk about his life and to talk about his legacy. Joining me on the line to do that is Rastafarian lawyer and activist Ras Gareth Prince, as well as advocate Sipho Mandula, researcher at UNISA's Institute for Dispute Resolution in Africa. I'll start with you, Ras Gareth Prince. Thank you so much for your time and thank you for joining Weekend Breakfast. Much appreciated.
One love and best greetings to all of the listeners. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Advocate Mandula, thank you for your time this morning. Really appreciate you taking and making the time.
A refreshing morning, my sister, and greetings to Ras Gareth, Edwin, to the listeners, Sister Rasule.
Thank you both for joining me, gentlemen. You know, for those that know the name Gareth Prince, just a refresher, Ras Prince is the lawyer who for over 20 years fought for the legalization of cannabis and was the first to approach the courts to decriminalize cannabis. We know that he had a legal fight against the criminalization of cannabis, which started in 1998 when Ras Prince, you were denied or refused admission as an attorney by the Cape Law Society because you had a criminal record for possession of cannabis. And you were found in possession of cannabis. Was this for religious reasons, lifestyle reasons? Remind us again what this particular battle was rooted in.
Yes, so my sister, as a Rastafari, we accept cannabis as a sacrament in our way of life. Mm. So we accept cannabis as that plant that gives us that ability to connect with our creator. So Rastafari, they abstain from alcohol and tobacco, and we choose to use cannabis as our sacrament. Mm. And because I refused to forswear my association and my usage of cannabis, which at the time was against the law, I was considered not fit and proper to practice as an attorney.
Sure.
Now, my reasoning on this particular issue was that as Africans and as South Africans that are indigenous to this country, our people are accustomed to the usage of cannabis as a sacrament, as a medicine, and as a food source. Mm. So there was absolutely no reason why we as Africans had to have laws against this plant that was indigenous to us. Mm. And in asserting my own identity, I refused to apologize for my association with a plant. And it is for that reason that I was considered not fit and proper to practice as an attorney in South Africa.
And here we sit, it's the 4th of April 2020, so many years later. Do you feel vindicated by the partial or the decriminalization or legalization of cannabis in one's domestic or private capacity?
Indeed, because the laws against cannabis was immoral in principle and totally unworkable in practice, just like apartheid. Mm. And just like apartheid had to come to pass, this vicious and evil and racist law had to come to pass.
Yeah.
So indeed, we are saying that the truth triumphs ultimately. You know, as Haile Selassie told us, that if with faith, courage, and a just cause, even in this 21st century, David would still be able to overcome Goliath.
Yeah. So I moved to Advocate Sipho Mantula, who also joins us on the line to talk about, and she's just to put us in the picture of the figure of Tafari Makinen, who on the 3rd of April in 1930 was proclaimed Emperor Haile Selassie, the first of Ethiopia. Advocate, if you would, you know, set the scene for us and tell us what exactly made Emperor Haile Selassie such an important figure. In my introduction, I talked about the fact that he transformed Ethiopia's government and institutions from a feudal system into a constitutional monarchy. Yes, he was not the ultra-democratic and liberal leader that we would want for our times, but what kind of chains and associations did he break during his time, and just how groundbreaking was his new view of how to govern in that at that time?
No, that is correct, my sister. You will understand that listeners are very privileged this morning to be taken through the narrative of an Ethiopian emperor. But a international pan-Africanist diplomat that even the Rastafarian community brought his stature to the media circles, because even to the history studies, because this is one leader that what he has changed in the early 1920s. You will remember that Haile Selassie was a young leader at a very young age, being given the province of Harar. Actually went during the period of 1930, you can say between the period of 1928 to 1930, it was even preparing him to become an emperor from a king.
Sure.
So what is critical, it is his governance, his passion for law, his understanding of the education, of health, as you are, one can say that Africa is now facing the perils and the challenges of health infrastructure and education systems. Now, here is a young leader, I mean, a young character, a big thinker in an African affairs, you know, bringing all leaders in Ethiopia and Ghana in 1958 during this month of April on the 15th. Hence, you had Africa Freedom Day.
Sure.
So his character is important, that even the liberation movement, Sister Filo, of South Africa, whether the ANC, the PAC, were given exile in Addis Ababa. So you can see the link of him of bringing change in terms of liberation in the continent, despite that in the 1930s, Sister Filo, between 1930 and 1936, there was an interruption by the Italians once more. So you can see that even if he wanted to modernize Ethiopia in his early years as a king on this day, as we are even celebrating, there was a lull or there was an interruption. But came 1941, that's where we saw again his leadership when he returned from exile to Addis Ababa to modernize it further and took it to the levels of 1960 when OAU was formed.
Yeah. And when we talk about modernization, what are we talking about? Was it strictly in terms of law and governance and how citizens were possibly engaged? What did modernization at that time look like?
Remember, he was coming from the village side, you know, Sister Filo, and when he went to Addis Ababa, there was no infrastructure at all. The first thing he did was to turn and give his palace to become a university. Mm-hmm. So the University of Addis Ababa was established in the early years of the 1960s. So he made sure that education was part of his modernization plan. You look at Ethiopian Airlines, this is one of the biggest airlines in the continent.
Sure.
That has been doing a great work. It was through his inspiration that he put Ethiopian Airlines to be the national carrier.
Mm.
So he looked at infrastructure of traveling, of aviation. He looked at the militarization as well, how to put the young people into military school.
Mm.
He worked on the education aspect. Like I say, he was a minister of education for more than 20 years. He looked at the issues of agriculture. He looked at issues of African liberation struggles. What will be happening? Because modernization means after independence, you need to modernize, you need to nationalize, you need to give power to the ordinary people. But he had challenges, like I've said, of foreign powers who had appetite for the glory of Ethiopia. Because remember, this is a country that was never colonized, but it was briefly invaded.
Absolutely. I want to move to you, Ras Gareth Prince, and I want to talk about Rastafari and the formational, the creation of this religious movement. Talk to me about it, because I think quite often, you know, if people have not encountered it directly, it's something that's referred to in the lyrics of raga or reggae music, or some might even just view it as, you know, a lifestyle. It is a religious movement, and maybe you can talk us through the beginnings and the formation of it, and just what are the principal tenets of it, and how exactly Emperor Haile Selassie figures in this religion.
So we are called after his birth name, Tafari. He was Tafari Makonnen, and Ras is an Ethiopian title that equivocates to prince in the English language.
Sure.
So that means head creator. And as we Rastafari reason, the head creator must be God. So the principal tenets of this way of life is a respect for life in the first place, mm-hmm. right? And there are many people that say that Rastafari is a continuation of the basic Christian principles.
Sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Rastafari is, in a very sense, the continuance of the legacy that was left by the character that we know as Jesus Christ. And there are many believe that Haile Selassie is the returned Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we must understand that for the past 500 years, Africa has been the subject of brute slavery and occupation. And the emancipation of the African people is a task yet unaccomplished. Now, our attempt to assert ourselves as human beings equal to any other being on the face of this earth is something that was championed by Haile Selassie, who took pride in the independence of African people and the ability of African people to determine their own destiny, and the fact that we did not have to see ourselves through the lens of foreign nations such as the Europeans in order to assert our own dignity.
Sure.
So the ability to see ourselves as African beings, as proud beings, as being the progenitors of humankind is part of what Haile Selassie and Marcus Garvey gave to us as African people. The fact that you can be yourself with, just by being yourself and just by associating with your own culture and not feeling ashamed about who and what you are. So we do not have to compare ourselves to Christianity or Islam or any of these other major religions. But what we know is that Rastafari as a way of life, because we insist that ours is much more than religion,
sure.
which has become very divisive in modern day times. We are saying that this is an ancient way of life that is people friendly,
mm-hmm.
that is environmental friendly, that is animal and earth friendly. Right? And those are the basic principles that we believe that any way of life or religion that claims to be worthy and that wants to attract people, we must ask the question, to what extent does your religion promote life and the advancement and the protection of life?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Rastafari way of life, the majority of us, we abstain from animal flesh, right? In a sense, because we respect the sanctity and the divinity of life, and we want to give protection to as many life forms as possible. That is why the majority of us have adopted the vegetarian or the ITIL lifestyle. The Rastafarian abstain from drugs and ITIL,
and I'm interrupting you, yeah. Ras Prince. ITIL meaning yeah. what? What does ITIL mean?
ITIL means things in their natural state.
Uh-huh.
Things in their natural state. All right, so that is what we prefer within life. Not all Rastafarians adopt it. There are some that eat fish, some that eat meat. But we are saying it's not necessarily what you eat that at the end of the day that makes you a Rastafari.
Mm-hmm.
But it is your commitment towards principle, right? Towards your promoting your identity as an African being, especially in this modern day times where being black and being African is considered as second class or lower class. But we are saying that is not the case, and that somebody like Haile Selassie and Marcus Garvey, Kwame Nkrumah, and other rulers, they have shown us that as African people, we can shine, and that we can, even in this modern-day time, play a very important part in the progression and the civilization of humanity. Yeah. And that is where Rastafarians, I believe, in this day and age have an important part to play in asserting the original African identity without shame.
Now, Russ Prince, this is, and maybe Advocate Mandula, you want to weigh in on this as well. I find it pretty interesting that when it comes to religious or political philosophies, especially in the culture, whether it's hip hop or spoken word, quite often, you know, names you've just mentioned Marcus Garvey, for instance, and some of his ideologies about uplifting black people or African people across the diaspora. Those often figured pretty deeply in especially earlier hip hop, you know, or conscious rap, as it were. Why do you think ideas like that and those specific specific figures, such as Haile Selassie, figured so prominently and gained so much traction within those circles?
You know, Starisville, you'll see the impact of reggae music as well, even if you cannot mix reggae and Rastafari.
Sure.
When you look at reggae and Haile Selassie, you see how the artist of Jamaica, when Haile Selassie visited Jamaica in the 1960s, in 1966, there was that linkage of him and African diaspora. Hence, you find that in the African Union, diaspora is being regarded as the sixth region, but it is not yet implemented.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the role of music, like you will say, from hip hop, you have your Cool Herc, who was from Jamaica. And then you'll have reggae that came up as another messaging that was explaining the role of African unity. Hence, you find the songs of the Wailers of Bob Marley and Peter Tosh,
sure.
Africa Unite.
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
are the relevant songs that you find that even cultural diplomacy, Haile Selassie was far advanced. They say as a king and emperor, he used to attend theaters. Usually he will go to a theater play and watch the plays, and he will support even sports, and even he will support music and as well as culture. So you will see in a leader, you need a culturally conscious leader.
Sure.
Like we are lacking from Africa now. So we are lacking leaders who are not culturally conscious, who don't see the agency of cultural revolution. So you find that even musically, reggae artists all over the world have been honoring and giving honor to the legacy of Haile Selassie.
Yeah, really, really interesting stuff. And with you, Russ, you know, what are the sort of seminal musical outputs that for you cemented just exactly the impact and the legacy of Haile Selassie for you? Russ Prince, sorry.
Oh, that question directed to me.
Yeah.
Personally, I mean, like Peter Tosh, Bernie Spear, and Bob Marley, those were some of the most ardent proponents and the ones that really articulated the philosophy to such an extent that I could feel that I can be a part of this.
Mm.
You know, the Rastafari resonates with so many ancient principles. That is why we're saying that it is much bigger than the religion. It is a way of life that connects us again to the way of the earth, because religion is something that has become very divisive in modern day time. But the earth is something that we all share, and a respect for the earth is something that humanity needs. In this 21st century, we have to realize that the environmental issue is one of the greatest challenges that we as a species face. And we believe that the ancient African ways of identifying with the earth, and that the Rastafari method of approach towards the earth and preserving the sanctity of the earth is something that the whole of humanity can learn from in this day and age. And as a matter of fact, that also connects with the ancient Khoi and the Sun way of approaching to the earth. And you will find that sociologists and anthropologists will tell you that there's a very close link between Ethiopians and the Khoi and the Sun people of this country. As a matter of fact, it's only Cape Town and Ethiopia, for instance, that's got black-maned lions.
Mm.
You know, so there is a very deep connection between the South Africa here, and Ethiopia. As a matter of fact, it was South African soldiers that coupled with British and that chased the Italians out of Ethiopia in that period of 1935 till 1941 that Russ spoke of earlier, when Ethiopia was briefly occupied by the Italians.
And fighting Mussolini's army. Now, Advocate, I'm going to give you, I'm going to let you sort of close off our discussion about the legacy and the vision of Emperor Haile Selassie the First of Ethiopia. And let's talk about his final years. We know that by the early 1970s, famine and worsening unemployment conditions, an increasing frustration about the government's inability to fix or respond to the country's problems undermined his rule. He was eventually placed under house arrest in his palace until his death in 1975. And it was in the early 90s that his remains were discovered buried under a toilet in the Imperial Palace. In many ways, it's an underwhelming and sad end to a visionary, a diplomat in the early 30s and 40s who traveled and sought diplomatic relations in a way that so many other African leaders at that time could not do or begin to negotiate for themselves in their countries. What does that tell us about how we should, as a continent, continue to approach leadership? I mean, he did rule for a long time. What does that tell us about? What's that essentially that message from the 1970s to contemporary African politics and governance and citizens as well about how we should approach a governance and leadership?
And I think one thing that we learn from him, as you have seen, that during the last years of His Majesty, there was a lot of interference and interruption that we should mention. All African leaders from Nkrumah, Lumumba, they were interrupted by foreign powers that we should raise. But in terms of his style of leadership, you'll understand that the African Union has been looking at his leaders in terms of dealing with conflict resolution. They've been even honoring him lately. Last year, they put a statue of him after so many years. So you can see that there is an acknowledgement on his legacy. But remember that there were some irreducible culprits, young people who came from, he has taken them out of his country, and they were the ones rebelling against his monarchy, by the way, even if he had relaxed their laws. So what is critical is that African leaders must understand that his style of leadership was of involving communities, it was of involving traditional leadership, was involving the church as well, as you have mentioned earlier in your introduction. The role of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church in its governance was very clear. And finally, I think education, the issue of linking political education, that was one of his key areas that he wanted to emphasize on the deficit of leadership. And young people taking the center stage, Mr. Rufila, I think that's what he has done to empower the young people of that country and of the broader region in terms of education. So I think his legacy rests on education, leadership, as well as cultural diplomacy.
Ross Gareth Prince and Advocate Sipho Mantula, thank you so much, both of you, for your time this morning. Much appreciated. And thank you for your insights and help in unpacking the legacy and the life of Haile Selassie.
Thank you.
All right.